You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. 1 or 2 degrees of Dan Inosanto, Part 2. Today I continue the story of the series of phenomenal people who my teacher and mentor, Dan Inosanto, has either trained under, taught, or crossed paths with. We pick up the story in the early 1960s, when one day, Dan's Kempo instructor, Ed Parker, asked him if he was familiar with the Filipino martial arts, or FMA, as some of us call them. Mr. Parker was from Hawaii, where these arts were practiced more openly than on the mainland, and had seen them in action. Dan had seen some of the farm workers in his hometown using asparagus knives for training weapons, but he had been a young child and didn't understand or appreciate what he was seeing. To him, they were funny old Filipino men playing games with sticks. He even sometimes joined with his friends in throwing dirt clods at these men. It never registered on the mind of young adult Dan Inosanto that as a child he had been observing an amazing family of martial arts styles in action. He answered Ed Parker's question with, "Do you mean stick fighting?" Mr. Parker replied that the Filipino martial arts were far more than just stick fighting, and that he should go check out his own martial and cultural heritage. Dan did just that. Knowing his father's relationship with the Filipino immigrant community, he went to him in Stockton and asked him if he knew any practitioners of FMA. "I wondered when you would ask me," was his father's reply. As it turned out, both his father and mother not only knew practitioners, they each were practitioners. That's an example of just how secretive this particular martial arts community was. Dan's father agreed to set up a meeting with a few old masters. When this meeting happened, Dan was taken aback by the appearance of these men. Up to this point in his martial arts career, all the teachers he had known, with the possible exception of his uncle Vincent, dressed a certain way, in uniforms with belts to signify rank, carried themselves a certain way, and talked a certain way. These old men acted very casual and relaxed, wearing shorts and Hawaiian shirts, flip-flops on their feet, and smoking big stogie cigars. They looked like nothing else but old Filipino men, just like the thousands he had seen throughout his childhood in Stockton, not like martial arts masters. Dan was not impressed, at least at first. This reaction highlights a phenomenon that I've seen many times myself, and seems to me to be a quirk of our very quirky human brain. We often are quick to be dismissive of things that are familiar, and drawn to things that we perceive as exotic or cool. To me, this qualifies as a logical fallacy, and I call it either the appeal to the exotic, or the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence fallacy. I have friends with professional boxers in their family or neighborhood, so to them, boxing is familiar and even seems mundane. This feeling of cultural familiarity caused some of them to seek training in Asian martial arts, rather than boxing, which was more accessible to them. When I asked one of them why this was, he responded with, "Boxing? My uncle does that," in a very dismissive tone. He might as well have said, "Ew." I've seen similar attitudes to wrestling. Here in the Midwestern U.S., we live in an area where many of the finest wrestlers in the world are trained, essentially free of charge, at school. Yet many people in the Midwestern U.S. ignore this amazing opportunity. At my academy, I have, through the decades, instructed at least a dozen people of Filipino extraction, and got similar reactions from most of them when I brought up the subject of FMA. There's an old saying that points to this phenomenon that goes, "Familiarity breeds contempt." In any case, Dan, out of respect for his father, ignored his misgivings and met with the old men. After they had showed him a small fraction of what they could do, He was absolutely blown away and frustrated. What these old men did with weapons, and also did empty-handed against weapons, was utterly unlike anything he had seen before in any of his already extensive martial arts training. This encounter was also Dan's first introduction to yet another amazing person who would play an important role in his life. That person, one of the old Filipino masters he met that day, was John LaCosta. LaCosta was a tiny firecracker of a human being, barely 5 feet tall and 100 pounds, who lived life to its fullest for each of his 89 years. He was a decorated military veteran, a farm labor leader, a ship's captain, a boxing coach, a dance teacher, and most importantly to us, an outstanding practitioner and teacher of the Filipino martial arts. His system was one of the most, if not the most, complete of the Filipino systems Dan was to learn, covering all variety of weapons at each possible range, and empty hand training as well for striking, infighting, and grappling. At one point in his young life, he took an Islamic name in order to secretly train in the south of the Philippines. There are dozens of John LaCosta stories. I'll share one with you. Word had gotten out that a gang of teenage boys was attacking and robbing the elderly in a South Stockton neighborhood. At the time, Mr. LaCosta was 86 years old. I quote from Mr. Inosanto's now out-of-print book, The Filipino Martial Arts. LaCosta himself was an elderly person, so he went for a walk in the vicinity of the muggings. Sure enough, the boys were waiting. When asked to describe his encounter with the boys, LaCosta replied,
"First boy, he say, 'Hey, old man, you got money?' I told him, 'No.' He say, 'What you think if I throw you in that tree?' I tell him, 'Maybe I throw you in that tree.' He come at me, and I throw him down and hold him like this. I look at other boy and I laugh. I say, 'Come, boy, you make me happy too.' Other boy, he get stick and run at me, try to hit me. I take stick away and throw him down. I point stick and say, 'You want to die, boy?' He say, 'No.' I say, 'Go home, boy.' He and other boys, they go home, and they don't bother anyone no more." When Dan asked LaCosta if he would accept him as a student, LaCosta replied that he would, but only if Dan first trained under four other masters. How many martial arts instructors do you know with enough confidence in their program to do that? LaCosta eventually passed away at the ripe age of 89, but not because he was 89. He was shot and killed by a deranged man who hid behind a door with a gun to ambush him. Dan went on, and has been going on, for the 55 years since meeting Mr. LaCosta, training under every good FMA teacher he could find, including, eventually, John LaCosta. His other FMA teachers read like a who's who of the Filipino martial arts. There are far too many to list here. At last count, he has been certified to teach the systems of 28 different FMA masters. Among them were John LaCosta, Regino Illustrissimo, Floro Villabrea, who was undefeated in dozens of unarmored full-contact stick fights, Leo Giron, and Leo Gahe, founder of Pakiti Tirsia Kali. Now I know what most of you are thinking. There's no way Mr. Inosanto could have trained exhaustively under all 28 of these masters. All I can tell you from my personal knowledge is that I have trained in many of these systems under Mr. Inosanto myself, and his knowledge of each of them is vast and intricate. I'm telling you, this man is like a Rain Man of the martial arts. In 1964, Dan's world was rocked when Ed Parker gave him the assignment of escorting and assisting a young Chinese martial artist that Mr. Parker flew into Los Angeles from Seattle. This young man had come to perform a demonstration of his unique approach to and philosophy of the martial arts at Mr. Parker's Long Beach International Karate Tournament. That young Chinese martial artist's name was Li Jun Fan. He had recently moved from Hong Kong to the U.S., where he took the English name of Bruce Lee. Li and Inosanto spent the next week with each other, most of it talking martial arts and training together. Mr. Lee's revolutionary ideas and amazing abilities were quite an eye-opener for Dan Inosanto. While Mr. Inosanto was the diametric opposite of an arrogant person, he was quietly confident and well aware of his abilities as a young adult athlete and martial artist. As a track and field athlete, he had won his college conference sprinting title, running the 100-yard dash in 9.5 seconds. He had been the leading rusher for his college football team as a running back, despite his diminutive size. Even though relatively young, he had been involved, off and on, in the martial arts for the better part of 2 decades. He was a top-level point karate tournament competitor in the western United States. He was an instructor for one of the most respected martial arts schools on the West Coast. Despite all of this, and to Dan's astonishment, Bruce Lee was able to easily counter and neutralize anything Mr. Inosanto tried in their workouts together. As a matter of fact, Mr. Inosanto has told me on more than one occasion that despite all of his considerable skill and knowledge, he was simply unable to score on Mr. Lee with any technique for all the years he knew him, and was unable to prevent Bruce Lee from scoring on him. But Bruce Lee was impressed with Dan Inosanto as well, who not only had an open mind, but also a rapidly growing desire to learn whatever Bruce Lee had to teach. Mr. Lee offered to teach Dan free of charge in return for his services as a demonstration dummy, as Mr. Lee toured the West Coast for a period of several weeks. Dan accepted and toured with him. The job, however, was difficult. Bruce Lee's demonstrations were not standardized. He would simply speak to the crowd about his martial arts philosophy, demonstrating feats of speed, power, and strength, frequently and unexpectedly calling on Dan to be the dummy to help demonstrate whatever came to his mind. This meant that Dan had to be ready for anything, including standing shock still while blindingly fast punches, strikes, and kicks flew dangerously near his face and body, or taking hard falls on all kinds of surfaces, or feeding attacks for Mr. Lee to counter. Later, in 1965, Bruce Lee moved to Dan's hometown of Los Angeles, where Dan began regular training with him. They became fast friends, training partners, and most importantly for the future of the martial arts, avid researchers and explorers into new frontiers of knowledge of fitness and fighting. Over the next years, Dan logged more than 2,000 private lessons with Bruce Lee. All of this while continuing to teach Kenpo for Ed Parker from 1965 to 1968. He gradually increased training time under Mr. Lee and decreased training time under Ed Parker. At a certain point, Bruce Lee expressed a desire to enlarge their training group. Dan invited several members from his old Kenpo school, and they accepted and formed the core of what would become Bruce Lee's Chinatown Junfan Gung Fu Institute, beginning in 1967. Mr. Inosanto did 90% of the teaching at the academy. Mr. Lee, whose television career was really taking off, usually taught on Saturday and Sunday. Over the years, martial arts greats like Joe Louis, Chuck Norris, and Mike Stone would drop in at times to train with Bruce and Dan. Through Bruce Lee, Dan also met Hollywood stars like Steve McQueen and James Coburn, both of whom became students of Bruce Lee's. In addition, another celebrity who trained for several years with both Lee and Inosanto was all-time NBA scoring leader Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who would go on to join Mr. Inosanto as a villain in Bruce Lee's film, The Game of Death. In the early 70s, Bruce Lee decided that his future was not in Hollywood. He closed the Chinatown school and moved back to Hong Kong to begin making kung fu films. Dan remained behind in Los Angeles and continued teaching a small group of students in his garage. After a few short years, the crushing news of Bruce Lee's sudden death hit Dan. The man who, in less than a decade, had changed his world forever was now gone. Forever. This sad fact took Dan temporarily into profound sadness, even depression. He ceased teaching the backyard classes. He didn't want to be perceived as profiting in any way from the death of his friend and mentor. This ends part 2 of 1 or 2 Degrees of Dan Inosanto. Anyway, that's what I think, but I could be wrong. Let me know what you think at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.